just for the record, for the tape, this is Marriage, Divorce, and Remarriage. It's part four. It's actually part one of our divorce lesson. So we'll be taking our first look at some of the definitions of what divorce is. Certainly we know we've been looking at the whole issue of marriage, divorce, and remarriage. Unfortunately, it's an issue that we have to know about and have to look at because the society we live in has made it an issue, and unfortunately Christians have been caught up in these issues. So we are looking at what does society say about marriage, divorce, and remarriage, and then, of course, most importantly, what does the Bible say about it? But it helps us to define our terms to start off with. We spent three lessons looking at what is marriage. We looked at generic definitions, modern definitions of marriage, and we'll do the same thing with divorce. We looked at some specific or legal definitions of marriage, where specifically we looked at South Carolina legislation on marriage. And then we looked at generic and specific Bible definitions, and those are the ones that will be most important for us. We'll do the same thing with divorce, although it's actually going to go a lot quicker with divorce than it did with marriage. We should get out of in two lessons with the definitions with divorce. And then we'll begin to put it all together and look at some applications. I would encourage you to bring specific questions you have to me. Two have already done that, and I appreciate it. We've already got a specific question about levirate marriage, and we'll be addressing that at some point during our study, this marrying of the brother when the husband had died, and the brother would then marry the wife to bring up children in the first husband's name. And also a specific question about what is the point at which people are actually married? What's involved to get to that actual point of marriage that makes the status of a married couple? If you have any other questions or specifics like that you'd like to know about, please bring them to my attention, and I'll make sure to work them in that we can get them in with the rest of the study. I'm also working on a packet of materials for you with these definitions in it. I planned on having some of that for you today. I decided better to wait and get everything together. So after next lesson, I'll get that to you and perhaps already some questions for the following lessons when we get into the applicational phase. But divorce, generic modern definitions. We wanted to get as modern as possible. We wanted to get as hip as possible with our definitions, find out what does the real world think when we think of the word divorce. And so I did these online dictionary searches. I think that's the hippest definitions we're going to find, the most current. So Merriam-Webster, that's a very respected dictionary, and they've got their online version. What do they say about divorce? Well, the first thing they give is this interesting historical note as they work on the etymology of the word. And they say the word comes from the Latin word divortere, which is a verb form that means to divert. And the example they gave and what the Latin was made up for was someone leaving their husband. It's interesting that the woman was seen as the cause of the adulteration, that she was leaving the husband. And we see that really as true. It is more of a chauvinistic, if you will, approach, because the adulteration happens to the man's bloodline. That something has happened to affect the bloodline that's usually patriarchal throughout history. And so the woman is often seen as the one who caused the adultery. We'll see in the New Testament that there are exceptions on both sides, that Jesus speaks of a man leaving his wife or a woman leaving her husband. But historically, since typically Latin societies and Western societies were patriarchal, then the woman was seen as the one who caused the adulteration when she left the man. It's interesting to note, though, that idea of diversion, you're leaving from something. Well, here's the actual definition. The action or an instance of legally dissolving a marriage. And I want us to look at how often legality and an actual marriage are involved. You can't divorce from someone you're not really married to. Even common law marriages, the divorce is actually just a separation. But we're talking about divorce here. It is a separation or a severance. And so that's kind of a really generic definition. And the example they gave was the divorce of the secular and the spiritual. Those things are completely divorced from one another. They're completely separate. But more specifically, it's the end of a marriage, to end marriage with one spouse by divorce. She divorced her husband, the example they gave there, again, the woman. To dissolve the marriage contract, that's important. Well, remember, part of our definitions of marriage is it's seen as a contract. Even in common generic usage, marriage is seen as a legal and binding contract. So this is a dissolution of that contract. They were divorced last year. They dissolved their contract. And then something else that gives an interesting nuance is to make separate or to keep separate. And we'll see this idea of divorce as something that's permanent, which is interesting because marriage is supposed to be permanent. But now the divorce is seen equally as a permanent entity. or the verb there, separate. So you should divorce church from state. These are the examples used in this hip dictionary. And the other usage of the word divorce is simply to obtain a divorce. They divorced, or he was granted the divorce, and so the word's used in that sense. So that's Merriam-Webster's look at divorce. A lot of interesting details, and we'll come back and pick those up as we look at some of these other definitions as well. Then you get WordNet. Of course, they're tied up to Princeton University, so this is the scholarly work. This is certainly the hippest scholarly outlook. What have they got to say? Again, notice the legal dissolution of a marriage. There's something lawful here. This is something that needs the law involved. It means to part, to cease, or to break association with. There's a social element. You remember back when we looked at the definitions of marriage, it changed the social relationship, the social status of the people involved. Here, when you undo the marriage, you also change the social status. You're breaking an association, and social is the central word there. And then the idea of getting a divorce. It's a formal termination to the marriage contract. The couple divorced after only 6 months. It's amazing how pessimistic, we noticed that with the marriage also, how pessimistic the examples are. It just kind of shows what our society has in mind. And then you've got Wikipedia. This is the hipster's hip dictionary, not necessarily the scholarly, but this is where you go in and write your own definition. So this is as many entries as possible. This is the best of all that conglomeration. This is what everybody that's on the internet thinks divorce is. It's the legal dissolution of a marriage. Same exact answer, first answer that Princeton gave. So a lot of intelligent people, or maybe Princeton's not as intelligent as they think. It's a complete or radical severance of closely connected things. That's a divorce. It's a radical. It's cutting something out by the root. I think that's an important definition when you think about what divorce is in the biblical light. It's something radical. It's not something that should be taken lightly. To dissolve the marriage bond. There's that word bond, and we'll see that in God's definition of marriage. They're bound or united together to become one flesh. And so here's a dissolution of something that should be bound. And then again, to end marriage with one spouse by way of legal divorce. There's oftentimes repeated that concept of legality. And here's a strong one, to cut off, to separate, and again, disunite. You're taking one flesh and making it two. You're doing exactly the opposite of what Jesus told the Pharisees. An idea that was completely divorced from reality, had nothing to do with reality, this idea. And then again, to obtain a divorce. So there's our generic look at the modern view of divorce. Well, there's some things that are common to all of those that I think we should pull out as our highlights. This is what the world thinks of when the world thinks of divorce. And there's a lot of details here that are important. It's a disunion. You can use that word. I don't know if I made that up. But it's a disunion. It's a breaking of union. It's the breaking of a bond. And it's done to legally married people. These are people that actually had a bond that was holding them together. It's the breaking of a legal marriage contract. Again, we're having a breach of contract here, but it's done in such a way that it's given legality. It involves formal legal action. Certainly, if you're going to dissolve a bond, if you're going to break a contract, you're going to have to involve the law to make sure that all parties are equally treated. Yes?
I haven't seen anything so far in the slides about a covenant.
Yeah, as far as
what the world or anything.
Yeah, like the world doesn't talk in those terms. Contract is as far as they get. Yeah, God certainly deals with the covenant idea, and we'll look at that when we get to our application. We did a little bit of that when we looked at the Old Testament and New Testament usage of Genesis 2. But we didn't get as specific as the covenant. It's a good point. But yeah, the world sees that contract there. That's as far as they get. It's a legal issue. What happens with divorce is it results in a permanent separation of legal association. That legal association you might think of obligatory association. There's no more obligation. However, there are sub-laws that say if there are children involved, there is still obligation. But in general, the obligation is separate. Yes, sir?
It's interesting how it's all legality. The legality has guidelines, but it doesn't, what typically breaks up a marriage, is the behavior of the participants. And none of these definitions give you guidelines on the behavior, it just gives you guidelines on, you know,
how the process is to work.
Exactly.
Yeah. The South Carolina legislature, which we'll get to in just a minute, actually talks about the behavior that's seen as a legal precedent for causing a divorce. That's kind of interesting. But yeah, this is not dealing with morality at all. It doesn't deal with the causes. This is just telling you what you can do to make it legal. This is what has to happen in order for it to really be a divorce. All these factors have to be involved. So you had to have people that were legally married first if you're going to legally divorce them. You have to break the contract. There has to be formalized legal action, and then the result should be permanent. Unless, of course, the law gets involved and remarries you, which we'll see eventually. So there's our generic definitions from Merriam-Webster, WordNet, and Wikipedia. But let's look at the specific modern definition. This is the legal definition. South Carolina legislature has a bit to say on divorce, as other state legislature also does. But here's what it pertains to us. It's under Title 20. That was the same title that marriage is under, domestic relations. Chapter 1 was marriage. Chapter 3 is divorce. Article 1, divorce is in this state. I'm giving you as much of this information as possible. You can look this up actually online, and it's just section by section as I'm putting it up here. You can find all of this. You can actually type in the word divorce, and it gives you a play-by-play of every time the word appears in the document. So here are grounds for divorce, and this is actually the whole section on divorce. First off, no divorce from the bonds of matrimony shall be granted except upon one or more of the following grounds, and here they are. Adultery, that's the one. That's the one that God talks about. You'll see there's actually quite a few more that men will bring in. Desertion for a period of 1 year. If there is desertion, if there's separation for a period of a year, then one of the two members can say, well, that's grounds for divorce. Physical cruelty. That's the one perhaps that tugs at most heartstrings, not mentioned in the Bible. That's the one I've most seen as, well, he gets drunk and beats me, or he comes in and he's threatening the kids, and so I had to leave him. I had to divorce him. But that's not a biblical reason. That's a man's reason. Here's another subsection of that, perhaps. Habitual drunkenness. And then it says, of course, that not just alcohol drunkenness, but that means drunkenness for any kind of narcotic drug. So drug abuse or drunkenness are both included there. And then if those reasons aren't met, then one of the two members can make an application for divorce if they have lived separate and apart without cohabitation for the period of 1 year. Isn't that interesting? Because we don't necessarily hear about that part. It seems like people just said, well, we can't live together anymore, so let's get a divorce. Well, South Carolina says there has to be a separation first. You can't just apply for a divorce. Even when these things, in the absence of some of these things here, if you just want to make an application for divorce, you have to separate for a year. Isn't that interesting? South Carolina legislature says so. Something we looked at last time was the fact that U.S. Constitution doesn't provide legislation on marriage or on divorce. It is determined that that will be a state-level issue. One of the issues that we looked at a lot with the state legislature last time in marriage is whether or not they will accept same-sex marriages. South Carolina prohibits it. 11 states currently accept it, and there had been as many as 13 at one point. But there's no, of course, mention of divorcing of homosexuals, because divorce dissolves any marriage contract. If the law recognized a homosexual marriage, then the law would divorce a homosexual marriage. It's the same sense. But this is a state-level issue, so the Constitution doesn't deal with it. So our specific applicational bit there with the South Carolina legislature was, as we just saw, the thing we need to remember, and I want to make sure we stress this every time, is that these dictionaries, encyclopedias, legal codes, any of these things we turn to see what people think the words mean, they don't create the definition. They just reflect what people are believing at the current time. And so, if we truly want to know what the word meant, we need to find the word in its original context. In our study, of course, that means we want to know what does divorce mean in the Bible. Because that's what we base our lives on. And we want to know, what was God talking about in the Old Testament? What was Jesus talking about in the New Testament? What did they mean by that? So that's where we're going to do the most of our digging, to get at the meanings of these words. It's nice to know what society thinks it means, but we want to know first off what God thinks it means. And what's amazing is that the basis for societal understanding comes really from God's law. Now, even society that rejects God's law stands on a basis of legality and stands on a basis of order that they would decry if someone took it away from them. So let's look at generic Bible definitions. First off, we're going to look into the Hebrew. We'll see what the Old Testament has to say. To do that, I've used Strong's Exhaustive Concordance. You could use any, but that's the one that's most convenient for me. We see the word divorce, divorced, or put away is only translated by four Hebrew words. That's as much as we find in the Old Testament, or four different words, to talk about these subjects, as much as I found at least. Here's the first one that's used mostly to translate the word divorce, and it's the word shalach, if you will. It's used four times, and it's got all of these meanings to it. It's used in other places in the Bible, not talking about divorce, that has these other meanings. To send away, let go, stretch out, let loose, to be sent. You can use it on the opposite side. I was divorced. Someone divorced me. Send off or away, out or forth. Dismiss, we see that usage in Deuteronomy 24. To give over, cast out. It's interesting here, I like that one, to shoot forth as of branches. So branches are divorcing from the tree when they branch out from the tree. It's kind of interesting. They're diverting from the original trunk is kind of the idea. We can see the legality of that that word divorce, how it comes, we can see the etymology, I mean, how that word divorce comes from divert. To let down, to shoot out, send off. Be divorced. There it is, buried way down here in the middle of the definition, the one that's the one we're using it for, or to be impelled to something. So Deuteronomy 22 is kind of interesting. It's neat to see the context in which these things are used. Deuteronomy 22, it's used a couple times in this section here, verse 19 and then again in verse 29. These are laws of sexual morality, if you'll read the heading that the New King James has put in. And I'll have somebody read here, verses 19 and 29. It actually starts at verse 13. Let's read 13 through 19 and get this context of this sexual morality here. Who'd like to read that for us? Bobby, got that?
If any man takes a wife and goes in to her and detests her and charges her with shameful conduct and brings a bad name on her and says, I took this woman, and when I came to her, I found she was not a virgin. Then the father and mother of the young woman shall take and bring out the evidence of the young woman's virginity to the elders of the city at the gate. And the young woman's father shall say to the elders, I give my daughter to this man as wife, and he detests her. Now he has charged her with shameful conduct, saying, I found your daughter was not a virgin. And yet these are the evidence of my daughter's virginity, and they shall spread the cloth before the elders of the city. Then the elders of that city shall take that man and punish him, and they shall fine him 100 shekels of silver and give them to the father of the young woman, because he has brought a bad name on the virgin of Israel. And she shall be his wife. He cannot divorce her all his days.
We get this divorce here is something that's prohibited. You cannot put her away. Doesn't matter what happens from here forward, you are forced to take her and she to be your wife. In 28 and 29, we get basically the same, verses 28 and 29, we get basically the same idea. And again, it's this no permission for divorce, no permission for driving her away. If this thing you have alleged is untrue, and the proof says that it's untrue, then you must keep her as a man. Then Deuteronomy 24 is the one we're most familiar with, these laws of giving the writ of divorce. And basically verse 4 is just saying that the former husband who divorced her cannot have her back. That's a permanent dissolution. He gave her a writ of divorce, then he doesn't have a right then to go and take her back. So that's where the word is used there. And then one of the more famous lines as well that I've even used as the initial line of our study there from Malachi 2:16, where the Lord says, I hate divorce. This is the word he uses, a driving out or a separating or an undoing of a bond.
Carl?
Yes, sir?
It says in verse 4 that he must not take her back because she's been defiled.
Yes.
Does divorce make her defiled, or something she does?
No, it's the marrying another man. It's having relations with another man that brings the defilement. Huh?
And that's not the same as the New Testament.
Absolutely not. No, we'll look at that when we get to the application stage. But you're right. Now, this law is completely separate from what the New Testament says. here's a word I'm not even going to try to pronounce. I didn't, doesn't even look like Hebrew to me, but that's the word. It's four times here it is used, and this is a specific word. This is the writ of divorce. It's actually in some of the texts we've already looked at there in Deuteronomy 24. And this is interesting because in the New Testament we get to find the Greek word that pertains to the same thing. We'll do that in our next study. But this is a very specific usage. Deuteronomy 24, since we're here, let somebody read those four verses there and we'll get this whole section on the writ of divorce. Dan, you got that for us?
I'm sorry.
Deuteronomy 24, 1 through 4.
When a man takes a wife and marries her, and it happens that she finds no favor in his eyes because he has found some uncleanness in her, and he writes her a certificate of divorce, puts it in her hand, and sends her out of his house. When she is departed from his house, and goes and becomes another man's wife. If the latter husband detests her and writes her a certificate of divorce, puts it in her hand, and sends her out of his house, or if the latter husband dies, he took her as his wife, then her former husband, who divorced her, must not take her back to be his wife after she has been defiled. For that is an abomination before the Lord, and you shall not bring sin on the land which the Lord your God has given you as an inheritance.
All right, very strong language, and it's really a protection for the woman. This is, she can't be just thrown around as a piece of property. She must be respected. You give her the proper legal separation, and then she belongs to someone else.
But in God's eyes, marriage is when the man and the woman get together.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not mentioned there's a ceremony. And in God's eyes, if the man and woman get together, they're married in his eyes.
No.
Under the Old Testament.
Now, there are ceremonies involved in the Old Testament.
Okay.
Yes, there is. We'll talk about that, too. It's an excellent point that's brought up. There are some that would say that whenever there's been sexual relationship, those two are then married. But that is not what the Old Testament shows. And we do see, quite typically, a ceremony involved. How formal it gets is varies with culture.
Did the priest conduct the ceremony, or a man of God?
That's more of a convention in the Western world.
In the Old Testament for the Hebrews.
That's an excellent question. I don't know. Yeah, I'll have to look that up. I don't think so. But yeah, that may be the case. That's a really good question. Somebody write that down and hand that to me at the end. I forgot to bring a pen up here with me, but I want to make sure I get to that one. It's a really good question.
I guess if it's not, then it would probably just be a ceremony that makes a public announcement.
Right. Well, what the ones I'm thinking of, we see with Jacob, and we see with Isaac, and we see with Abraham as they're publicly exchanging gifts for their women. The dowry kind of idea came from that. I think the priestly convention is a convention from Western world, but I'm not absolutely 100% on that, so I'll look into that and see what we can find. It's a good question. At any rate, this idea of the bill of divorce is this one long Hebrew word. We have a phrase, that word means bill of divorce. Isaiah 50, the Lord there talking about giving a certificate of your mother's divorce to the children of Israel. I'm divorcing myself from Israel. Where is the certificate that I gave her? Don't you have proof that I'm no longer the God of Israel, the idea? And in Jeremiah, the same kind of thing. I have divorced myself from that covenant, from that contract, because they broke the covenant. So he uses that word again. A word that's translated usually in the past tense as divorced appears five times, and it's the word gerish or garash, and it's used for all these different things, to drive out, expel. You see this forcing away is the idea behind divorce. It's really a very negative term. It should be. We should see it that way. But in our society, unfortunately, it's just seen as, well, it's what happened. But they're always very, very negative and very forceful type words in the Old Testament here. Leviticus 21 and 22, dealing with these sexual immoralities, talking about people that are having relationships when one has been divorced from another. Jesus makes a sweeping statement in the New Testament that those who has married one who's been divorced is committing adultery. This is what led up to that. I keep pushing the wrong button. This is what has led up to that, are these statements in Leviticus 21 about the impurity of sexual relationships with a divorced person. And then certain prohibitions to the priest from marrying someone who was a widow who had been divorced. So we get this word that's used in a very specific way in these cases here. In Numbers 30, I think we had an interesting case there that I wanted to look at. And this may just be a reiteration of those. Yeah, this is just talking kind of interesting. It's a, the difference between a vow made by a woman who's married and a vow made by a woman who's a widow or who's divorced, that she has to have the vow stand against her. The husband can overrule a woman's vow if she's married, but in the case that she's not, that she's been divorced or is widowed, then she has to be responsible for her vow. And that's all that that's trying to bring out there in Numbers. And then we get this word, this phrase that's more often understood in the New Testament, this putting away. And this is the specific word that's used in the Old Testament here, is yatsah, and it's only used twice, and it's used in a very specific context. I think it's interesting. But it again, it has this idea of going out, coming out, exiting, to cause to go or come out, to lead out, to deliver. Let's look in Ezra, and I think you'll remember the context here. It's brought out both by Nehemiah and Ezra. Ezra chapter 10. Ezra chapter 10. The people that had come back from the captivity and intermarried when they came back, and God was very adamant about marrying with pagan women. And so when Ezra and Nehemiah found out about this, we have a very strong reaction from them. It's an interesting text. Why don't we read Ezra 10, 1 through 19, and we'll see this used a couple of times in here. I know it's only used in a couple of verses, but it's interesting to see why this was so important and the reason this strong of a reaction was used. Who would like to read that for us? Ezra 10, 1 through 19. Nathaniel, got that?
Now while Ezra was praying and while he was confessing, weeping, and bowing down before the house of God, a very large assembly of men, women, and children gathered to him from Israel. The people wept very bitterly. And Shechaniah, the son of Jehiel, one of the sons of Elam, spoke up and said to Ezra, "We have trespassed against our God and have taken pagan wives from the peoples of the land. Yet now there is hope in Israel in spite of this. Now therefore, let us make a covenant with our God to put away all these wives and those who have been born to them, according to the advice of my master and of those who tremble at the commandment of our God, and let it be done according to the law. Arise, for this matter is your responsibility. We also are with you. Be of good courage and do it." Then Ezra arose and made the leaders of the priests, the Levites, and all Israel swear an oath that they would do according to this word. So they swore an oath. Then Ezra rose up from before the house of God and went into the chamber of Jehohanan, the son of Eliashib. And when he came there, he ate no bread and drank no water, for he mourned because of the guilt of those from the captivity. And they issued a proclamation throughout Judah and Jerusalem to all the descendants of the captivity, that they must gather at Jerusalem, and that whoever would not come within 3 days, according to the instructions of the leaders and elders, all his property would be confiscated, and he himself would be separated from the assembly of those in captivity. So all the men of Judah and Benjamin gathered at Jerusalem within 3 days. It was the ninth month, on the 20th of the month, and all the people sat in the open square of the house of God, trembling because of this matter and because of heavy rain. Then Ezra the priest stood up and said to them, "You have transgressed and have taken pagan wives, adding to the guilt of Israel. Now therefore, make confession to the Lord God of your fathers and do his will. Separate yourselves from the peoples of the land and from the pagan wives." And all the assembly answered and said with a loud voice, "Yes, as you have said, so we must do. But there are many people. It is the season for heavy rain, and we are not able to stand outside. Nor is this the work of 1 or 2 days, for there are many of us who have transgressed in this matter. Please let the leaders of our entire assembly stand, and let all those in our cities who have taken pagan wives come at appointed times, together with the elders and judges of their cities, until the fierce wrath of our God is turned away from us in this matter. Only Jonathan, the son of Asahel, and Jehaziah, the son of Tikva, opposed this, and Meshulam and Shebathai, the Levite, gave them support. Then the descendants of the captivity did so, and Ezra the priest, the certain heads of the father's households, were set apart by the father's households, each of them by name. And they sat down on the first day of the 10th month to examine the matter. By the first day of the first month, they gathered questioning, or they finished questioning, all the men who had taken pagan wives. And among the sons of the priests who had taken pagan wives, the following were found: of the sons of Jeshua, the son of Josadak, my brothers, Messiah, Eliezer, Jarib, and Gedaliah. And they gave their promise that they would put away their wives, and being guilty, they presented their ram of the flock as their trespass offering.
It's an incredible scene when you think about this, and it took them several months actually to get this whole situation taken care of. They were burdened by what they had to do. Divorce is not something they looked at in a light way, but they were more burdened by the fact that they had these wives, which was against God's law. And so, to make sure this was done orderly and properly, and that everybody was taken care of, they set up this council with the heads of the father's households to make sure they got every one of these taken care of. Nehemiah describes when they discovered this, so they're pulling out hair and pulling out the hair from their beards, and this was a really awful and terrible scene. That's what it takes to really put away. That's what this is really about. This is the kind of description that we should think of when we think about divorce. Now, here is the case where they're divorcing people that God said, you better divorce from them. You should never have married them. But divorce should bring with it that ugliness. That's kind of an image of this terrible dissolution of a bond that God had created. That's why Jesus almost with disgust responds in the New Testament to the Pharisees questioning, hey, is it lawful to divorce a woman for any reason? He says, no, it's not. Think back about what God has put down as the law for this. But these are the Hebrew words. That's it. That's all we've got. What's amazing is that even in the New Testament, looking in Vine's dictionary, as we'll begin to look next time, there's only three specific words that are used there. One of them is used 12 times. And so we see that it's a very specific word. One of those words that's used just a few times is that writ of divorce. It's this very specific word that translates that writ of divorce, and another one is just a general term for divorce. Lord willing, we'll look into those for next time. But what we've looked at today are these generic definitions again. We've seen what society thinks when they think of divorce. We've seen the application in the legal definition that there are certain conditions that must be met within South Carolina before someone can actually even apply for a divorce. One of those conditions in general is at least a trial, a period of separation for a period of 1 year, or specific abusive situations that can be grounds for divorce. What we see in the Bible is a little bit different. We haven't looked at the applicational part, which, Lord willing, we'll do that next time. Once we finish the generic definitions. But what we see generically in the Bible, and we'll look at a greater list of these common generic issues next time as well, but we've seen that divorce is a terrible forcing of a contract, or forcing of a togetherness. It's a casting off. It's a cutting off, or a forcing away, or throwing away. Over and again, we see those terms such as expel, send off used over and again. What we're going to find in the New Testament is very similar language. Divorce is something that God always puts in a negative light, and that's why Malachi 2:16, God hates divorce. It's something that we should abhor from before we ever get involved in a marital relationship. We should know ahead of time that divorce is an abhorrent thing, and it's a terrible thing in the eyes of the Lord. I appreciate the suggestions. I will definitely look into those things. Comments or questions before we wrap it up and hand it over to the invitation this evening. Yeah.